The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Hey, hey, folks. We are back with The Wow, the Woody Overton Window. I'm Mike Agavino here with my pal Woody on Monday, July 21st. This is episode 13, lucky 13, Woody.
Yes, it is. Lucky 13. And happy birthday Eve to my wife, Cindy.
Oh, happy birthday, Cindy.
Yeah. She's about to turn another year, another trip around the sun or however you want to call it, right? And
this is a heavy, heavy shopping occasion for you. I know you're light on Valentine's Day, but birthday is heavy Woody shopping.
Light on so much of that, but I got to do something. We'll see.
Well, was your trip down to New Orleans was part of the birthday celebration a little bit early?
Well, actually, we went to see, of course, the recording's early, but I took her to Thomas Kane's concert Saturday night and all that. So we'll see. And then I know the kids are coming on Sunday to, cook and all that. And so there'll be birthday celebrations.
Good. Well, happy birthday, Cindy. So maybe Woody Overton's favorite story over the last couple of years has been the story
of the movie. The only one I hate worse is fucking Pawpaw or whatever his name was.
Murdoch. You actually liked Murdoch for a while.
I knew they were going to find him fucking guilty, and you and Jim were so adamant that he was going to get off. I was like, no, that motherfucker's going to prison.
But I have to defend Jim here. It was only really me saying I might get off. Yeah. But I certainly didn't see, and I don't think you would have seen what ended up happening with Alec Baldwin's trial and the charges getting dismissed. And I am dying to get your take on this and whether you've ever seen anything like this happen before. But you might recall that the Mexico jury back in March found Hannah Gutierrez Reed, who was the armorer, guilty in her trial. So that was for manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter. And Alec Baldwin's trial started a couple of weeks ago. During the middle of Baldwin's trial, we learned that his attorneys had filed a motion to have the case dismissed. Baldwin's defense team was claiming that prosecutors withheld evidence that may have been material to their case. Baldwin's lawyer, Alex Spiro, told jurors about a theory regarding the ammunition and a so-called Good Samaritan who came forward to investigators in just the last few months claiming to have evidence supporting this theory. During Spiro's cross-examination of Santa Fe County crime scene tech, Marissa Popple, Popple testified that a, quote, Good Samaritan had come to authorities with ammunition earlier this year. So this is after the trial of Gutierrez Reed that this supposed Good Samaritan comes forward. Spiro claimed that this new ballistic evidence emerged after Gutierrez's trial ended and that investigators had not shared it with Baldwin's defense team, nor with Gutierrez's team, who could potentially have used it or now could use it on appeal. Spiro further claimed that the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office had taken possession of live rounds of ammunition that were provided by this Good Samaritan as evidence, but that they did not record the evidence in the official case file or reveal the existence of this evidence to the defense team. Carrie Morrissey, who was the special prosecutor in the case, insisted that this disputed ammunition was not in any way linked to the case or hidden from Baldwin's lawyers. In a stunning turn of events, the judge, Mary Marlowe Sommer, dismissed the case last Friday, agreeing with the actor's lawyers that prosecutors had hid this evidence and that the evidence may have been linked to the fatal shooting of Helena Hutchins was her name, the cinematographer on the movie, which was called Rust. There is no way for the court to right this wrong, said the judge. The sanction of dismissal is the only warranted remedy. The dismissal was with prejudice, meaning the involuntary manslaughter case against the actor cannot be filed ever again. Teske is the name of the former police officer who was a friend of Thel Reed, who is the stepfather of Hannah Gutierrez Reed. And Thel Reed is perhaps the most well-known armorer in Hollywood. And so Teske delivered the rounds to the sheriff's office on the same day that Hannah Gutierrez Reed was convicted. So Woody, I'm not saying I know this to be true, but there's speculation that all of this may have been a setup, that Baldwin has top attorneys. They hired a very good private investigative firm, and they see some kind of path toward creating potential confusion by providing, quote, evidence that they know to be meaningless, but they provide it in such a way that they believe it will be ignored by the prosecution, even though it goes into the case file. Have you ever come across anything like that?
Well, a couple things on this. And the only thing that really shocks me about this is they dismiss it with prejudice. It's a Brady violation. Anytime evidence is not disclosed to the defense so they can prepare a proper defense. But normally they just declare a mistrial and they can come back and do it again, right? So I don't know about that part. Do I think it's a conspiracy or any shit like that? No. Do I think that, they got this evidence in and knew it was going to cause a shit show and hoping to get at least a mistrial and then maybe the DA wouldn't want to refile and spend the money? And look, this is bullshit. This whole case is fucking bullshit. I never believed Baldwin should have been charged. You hire an armor for these sets. I don't know exactly what the rules are. Baldwin is not a firearms expert. And when he's handed a weapon, he's not supposed to, it's not like a cop where you're going to check the weapon and make sure it's clear and all this shit. I mean, that's their job. He hired them, or the movie people hired this Gutierrez, whatever her name is, to be that expert and to make sure it's safe. So Baldwin should have never been charged to begin with. And this whole story's fucking totally stupid. Other than, the guy motherfucker got killed, but it wasn't Baldwin's fault. And him being on trial is stupid. If his defense team came up with something that they beat the prosecution on, well, that's why we have our justice system. I'm going next week to be an expert, not just an expert witness, kind of slash, I don't call myself an investigator, but a consultant. And I'm gonna tear this fucking case to shreds. And it's not the prosecution's fault that I'm better than they are in this area. And I found where they're weak, and it is what it is. And the attorney is going to win the case for his client, and rightfully so. And just like I used to teach the young guys, if your shit's not correct, don't do it. Man, let them go, and they'll be assholes. You can dance again another day. But if you come with a weak shit, you deserve to get beat. And because you have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, not beyond a shadow of all doubt or whatever, but beyond a reasonable doubt. And there's no way they would have ever convicted him of anything. But thankfully, his defense team allegedly got it dismissed.
Now, that's the criminal case. there's a civil action pending. And so do you think he'll also be found innocent in the civil case?
It'll never go to a civil trial. The insurance company's going to pay it off. And they're going to do depositions and shit to make more pressure on them, et cetera, but they're going to settle it. And they already know what how much they're going to settle it for. So that's all fucking fluff.
We agree on that. And the only unfortunate thing is it won't allow me to do another story on Alec Baldwin and Russ.
Yes, I'm not doing another story.
Disappointed about. But having said that, I do get the thrill of, once again, folks, an episode of Woody Does Gossip, where Woody's going to talk to us about the trouble in Vanderpump Land.
Yeah.
Lots of our listeners watch this show. Woody,
so. Oh, yeah. My wife watches this, but I'm going to go on the record and let y'all know right now, I've never watched the show. I don't know these people. I don't know anything about them. And Aga wrote this for me. So here we go. All right. So the last two seasons of Vanderpump Rules, whatever the fuck that means, have followed the affair of Tom Sandoval and former cast member Rachel Levis. Is that right, Mike? Levis?
Yeah, it's good.
All right. And how that affair tore apart the Vanderpump cast. Now comes the word that Tom Sandoval is suing his longtime live-in partner, Arena Maddox, and blaming the woman he cheated with, Rachel Levis, for the revenge porn drama. Oh, that's interesting.
Okay, Woody, hang on one second. We've got a. I know you've watched this and you're trying to get people off the scent. I know you know her real name is Ariana Maddox, so don't play those games.
Did.
It's okay that you watched it. Just use Ariana.
I'll use Ariana. TMZ is reporting the new court documents reveal that Sandoval is accusing Maddox of illegally accessing his phone and invading his privacy in March of 2023. This allegedly illegal access of his phone resulted in Maddox discovering explicit videos of Levis. All right. So Sandoval is alleging that Maddox made copies, which she probably did, of the of the explicit footage and sent it to Levis and other named parties without Sandoval's permission. By doing so, Sandoval claims Maddox has opened herself up to financial liability and violated California's criminal code. And I guess that's revenge porn. But although it is unclear as to whether Sandoval has reported the matter to police, well, it can't prosecute if you don't report it. But Maddox admitted on an episode this past season to discovering the illicit footage of Levis on Sandoval's phone, but she denied distributing the video in a revenge porn lawsuit brought by Levis earlier this year. Now, in Levis's revenge porn lawsuit, she accused Sandoval of recording their intimate FaceTime sessions without her knowledge. She also accused Maddox of distributing at least two sexually explicit videos after discovering the affair, which was dubbed Scandoval by Bravo fans. Now, Maddox's attorney, Jordan Sussman, has since hit back at Sandoval's claim, accusing the Vanderpump Rules personality of tormenting and conducting emotional warfare against his former partner. We're sure this isn't the last update from this ever-growing Sandoval drama. Stay tuned. So Mike can tell you about it next time.
Outstanding, Woody. Outstanding.
Hey.
That's drawn you in, hasn't it? I mean, this juicy drama going into next season is, I'm going to talk to Cindy about it, but I think this is going to draw you in. You're going to need to watch
it. Cindy would tell you she goes in the other room and watches it while I watch fucking Receivers or something on Netflix. Right. So,
okay, well, folks, please get on the social and push Woody to watch Vanderpump next season and get caught up on reruns.
Is Vanderpump the name of a cast member, or is that some?
Yes, Lisa Vanderpump is a restaurateur in LA who's had a number of restaurants through the years, and the cast members are all people who worked at her restaurants. It's sort of grown from there and grown a lot from there. So,
all right,
I've got a really, really crazy story. And a video that captures the story, and it's something to watch. But this is a fishing charter arranged out of, I'm not sure what town it would be, but this happens in the Gulf. Okay. So there's shocking footage that captures the moment a massive blue marlin nearly kills a fisherman. Now it's Fairhope. So it's Fairhope, Alabama that it's out of. So by Mobile. So Fairhope Fishing Company are the ones who shared this clip of this freak accident. And it was aboard a boat called the Jubilee. This happened on Monday, and they posted it to their TikTok. A group of fishermen were reeling in a gigantic marlin when it swiftly jumped on board. And I mean, it didn't just jump on board. You see the fish off in the distance at first, break water and jump. And then it gets a little closer to the boat. It breaks again and jumps, immediately submerges. And when it surfaces again, it is in a dive onto the boat. And the, what do you call it? The bill, I guess, of the blue marlin, the sharp, right, long bill.
Yeah, the bill, right.
Is headed right at the guy who's reeling the fish in. And instead of, it's like the Trump assassin shot. Instead of getting him straight on, he actually turns a little bit and doesn't get the worst of it. He still gets speared, but he gets speared on the side. This was a 12-foot long fish. I mean, it's a 2,000 pound fish that gets him. And so he said that not only did his life flash before his eyes, but he hit the floor and assumed the position. I mean, he thought he was dead, because he knew it got him, but he didn't know the degree to which it got him. We'll post the video of this for everybody to look at. But ever have a situation like that come close, sport fishing, Woody?
Tons of times, and it could be whatever species. It could be a barracuda. It could be anything. When you land this fish on deck, and you know, everybody knows, get the fuck out of the way. But let me tell you this: I did not believe they were going to land this blue marlin. That marlins, you don't eat them, or anything else. The most of the time, they'll get them up to the side of the boat and they'll measure them and they'll take pictures, but they don't bring them on deck because it's dangerous as fuck. And they'll take pictures, and when you see the ones and people have mounted now, those are fakes. But it is to the size and the color that this fish was. They would have released this fish. There's no reason to keep it. But I mean, this fucker's jump 15, 20 feet out of the water at a time when you're fighting them. It's a dangerous animal. It's like playing with a tiger. Yeah. Sooner or later, you're going to get bit.
And they're brutal, brutal fights. My wife's uncle has, they live down in Cabo, and he's got a boat and charters in Cabo. And we went out on the boat, and he sort of winked to his captain to work me over. And I've done a little fishing in my life, not a ton of fishing in my life, but I knew I was getting worked over, because every time he could have helped me by taking a different angle toward the fish to help me eat up some slack quickly, he put me on the other side of it. I mean, I fought that thing for, I don't know, 45 minutes. My arms and my back were just falling off before we actually got it to the, like you're saying, got it to the boat and released it. But
a lot of time the charter boat captains will pull you up behind a shrimp boat or something first and let you catch a bit bonita, which you can't eat. But then some bitch fights like tuna a little bit. It takes you like 45 minutes, and then you're wore out, and they're like, okay, now let's go. Right.
That's yeah. We need to just give this guy like two beers and the day is over.
Yeah.
Well, folks, if you're out fishing in the Gulf and you've got a 12-foot marlin on the line, and that marlin leaps through the air onto your boat and impales you, chances are your family is going to have to plan a funeral.
Right. And we know just the folks to handle it for them. All they got to do is drive up to Broussard, Louisiana, and find that humongous American flag.
That flag marks the location of our friends Roy, Kristen, and Kristen at Louisiana Funeral Services and LA Pet Crematory. Their team will yank that marlin's spear-like snout right out of your chest and have you looking pretty by the time friends and family come to see you.
Yeah, they, you know what? They could also cremate that marlin and have it buried back at sea if you like, right?
Whether an angry marlin gets you or you go by more orthodox means, at some point your day will come. And when it does, someone who loves you can drive to Broussard and find that humongous American flag where Roy, Kristen, and Kristen will treat you even better than an impaled fisherman.
You know what to do. Go to lafuneralservices.com or lapetcrematory.com, and our trusted friends, Roy, Kristen, and Kristen, will take great care of you. That's lafuneralservices.com and lapetcrematory.com.
Best easy. We're always close with that, Woody. Sorry, guys. We never perfectly sync our rest easies. Woody, I was shocked the other day to hear about former NFL player Jacoby Jones that I didn't know how old he was, but I certainly remembered him as a player, and I didn't realize that he was living in New Orleans. So tell us about what happened.
It's a crazy story. I mean, he is a former Super Bowl champ, and he's dead at the age of 40. That's 14 years younger than me. And the Jones family just released a statement to the NFL Players Association that Jacoby died peacefully at his home in New Orleans, Louisiana. The family, including his mother, Emily, and his son, little Jacoby, are together and are asking for your prayers. And they're also asking for privacy and support as they navigate through this difficult time. Now, the former NFL star receiver, Jacoby Jones, who won Super Bowl.
Woody, do you know why I want to learn more Italian?
Why, Ago?
Because my niece is getting married next month, and that means a wedding full of these crazy Italians from out of town.
Huh. And when it comes to learning a new language, there's only one leader, Rosetta Stone.
Rosetta Stone's the most trusted language learning program, period. I've come a good ways using Rosetta Stone, but it's time to take it to the next level. My niece's wedding will be great prep for a trip I want to take next year.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. No English translations. Rosetta Stone helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention.
And the True Accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Lifetime membership has all 25 of the languages for the rest of your life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today.
That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 languages for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right. Good deal. Who won the Super Bowl?
Woody doing Roman numerals there. So XLV11. That's nice four. One. I believe that would be, well, X sounds 40, 40, 47.
All right, so he won Super Bowl 47 with the Baltimore Ravens, has passed away, and he was only 40 years old. And ex-NFL quarterback Matt Leinart and Jones' former teammate confirmed devastating news on Sunday, saying he's heartbroken over Jacoby's death. Now, details surrounding his death have not been released. I do believe they probably will in time, but NFL players and fans have been flooding social media with tributes since the sad news, including former Ravens wide receiver Torrey Smith, who said, "Jones was one of a kind. We're going to miss you," Smith said. "Love you, bro." And J.J. Watt, another class act guy, said, "Jones was one of the most fun-loving teammates to be around, and he's gone far too soon." And when a seemingly healthy 40-year-old former athlete dies unexpectedly, I mean, you got to wonder, right? The owner of the Beaumont Renegades, which is an indoor football league that hired Jones as its inaugural head coach in April, also confirmed the former receiver's death on Sunday. Sam Gordon called Jones the most humble and kind person to anybody in a phone interview with Houston TV station Sunday morning. "It's been 5 days since Jacoby's death, and we still have no cause of death." I still think they're going to come out with it, right? Somebody's going to leak it or whatever, and hopefully it wasn't a drug overdose or something. I don't know. But interesting story.
I mean, I've looked everywhere for local stories, other national stories, and across the some people I know, for his reputation was pristine. I don't think this is a the only way this could be a drug thing, in my opinion, is if it was a fentanyl deal where he was trying to get some, you know, other kind of, you know, Adderall or something and got ended up with a fentanyl poisoning. But I don't know. I mean, we've seen too many of these. You've got lots of reports coming out here now that that do see the light of day about the impact of some of these vaccines. Don't know where Jacoby would have been in terms of vaccines, or maybe he had a congenital heart issue that they never picked up. I had a guy that worked with me that at 39 years old dropped dead in my arms and thought he was perfectly healthy until that moment. And they found out that he had a congenital aortic valve issue that had never been picked up. So it could be something like that, but it's just weird that it takes them this long. I mean, it just causes suspicion and you know, anxiety when it takes this long for the public to find out what happened. So hopefully they clarify.
And they may know. Family may know and be like, "Fuck the public. It's not. It's our family member. You know, his public life is over. We don't deserve the public an answer, right?" Some people are like that.
Yeah. Could be. Well, it's the time of the week every Monday when we talk about my podcast series, With the Benefit of Hindsight. We are on episode number 4, which is called The Administrators, and we call this segment Nittany Lying. So last week we discussed the counterintuitive nature of the role played by the paternal family throughout the scandal. That episode illustrated the upside down nature of the case. It was logical for the media and the public to discount John Ziegler's version of the events because the paternal family discredited John. We learned in episode 3 that the Paternos, and in particular Scott Paterno, had other reasons for trying to sabotage Zieg's efforts. If what John was saying about victim number 2, the boy in the shower, was true, then he had never been abused by Sandusky. Then it must also be true that Mike McQuarrie lied, that the presentment lied, and there can't possibly have been a cover-up because there would have been no crime for anyone to cover up. And so if Ziegler's revelations about the boy were to become understood publicly, it would have also become understood that Scott Paterno had destroyed his father when he declared, quote, "Children have been hurt," and quote, "We need to say a prayer for the victims," on the Tuesday night before his father, Joe Paterno, was fired. If Ziegler's revelations about the boy were to become understood publicly, It would also have exposed the negligence of the Penn State Board of Trustees and the leaders of that board who called for Spanier, Graham Spanier, the president of Penn State at the time, and Joe Paterno's firings. The person at the top of the board was Tom Corbett, the governor of the state of Pennsylvania. Corbett was also the guy who ensured Scott Paterno as a Republican lobbyist was gainfully employed. Episode 4 of The Administrators, Zig shows how critical the alleged cover-up was to the entire case. Essentially, the government had used the cover-up to prove the crime rather than first proving a crime and then proving a cover-up. Former Pennsylvania Attorney General and Governor Tom Corbett is the central figure in this episode. Corbett was Pennsylvania's Attorney General when the grand jury investigation into Sandusky began. The investigation stemmed from a single complaint that was actually filed by a mother, even though her son denied that he was abused for a couple of years. He eventually said that he was, but the mother filed the report. The son had never claimed any kind of abuse. The case had really had exhausted one full grand jury. So I think you can serve a grand jury 2 years. So it had exhausted a first grand jury and was on the second grand jury without getting a true bill out of that grand jury. We have emails from the district attorney, Janelle Eschbach, to the attorney general, Linda Kelly, saying that they need to drop the case. And then suddenly, a tipster in a Penn State chat room shared a story about a guy named Mike McQueary supposedly seeing something in a Penn State locker room shower years earlier. Tom Corbett's political ascent was nearly thwarted by a very public battle he had with Penn State President Graham Spanier. As part of Corbett's campaign for governor, he had talked about making extreme cuts to the state's funding of the university system. Hundreds of millions of dollars in funding were at stake. Graham Spanier took a defiant stance against the cuts and delivered some powerful speeches that curried a lot of favor publicly, embarrassing Corbett. Corbett won the election, but Spanier won the battle that mattered to him. Spanier also had endorsed Corbett's opponent in the race for governor and made a very public appearance with that candidate, hosting him at a Penn State football game. Suffice to say, Tom Corbett had serious disdain for Graham Spanier. So as the governor of Pennsylvania, Corbett also sat on the board of trustees of the state-owned university, Penn State University. And so it was Corbett who appealed to that board to, quote, remember the boy in the shower as they were deliberating over Spanier and Paterno's terminations. We learned a little bit more about the free report in episode 4. The board, under the guidance of Corbett and U.S. Steel CEO John Surma, hired former director of the FBI, Louis Free, to conduct a, quote, independent investigation about the scandal. Corbett had an existing relationship with Free, and the hiring was Corbett's decision. They paid Louis Free $6.5 million for what they expected the result to be, for him delivering what they wanted. Just a month after Sandusky was convicted, the Free report was released. Once again, there's a mysterious leak, and that leak gives that same Cub reporter named Sarah Ganim an advanced copy of the report. Meanwhile, the Free team announces that there are server problems, and because of those, they are only going to be able to distribute a summary of their findings to reporters in advance of Louis Free's press conference, where he's scheduled to announce the findings. So no surprise, the Free report fully exonerates the board and finds that the Penn State administrators conspired to cover up the crimes of Jerry Sandusky in order to protect the reputation of the university and the football program. Ironically, the key evidence behind Free's claims come from a series of emails between Gary Schultz, that's the VP administrator, Tim Curley, the athletic director of Penn State, and Graham Spanier, the president, all regarding the McQueary incident and how to handle Sandusky. It was almost comical with Free claiming his investigative team had uncovered the emails when in fact the emails had been turned over by Gary Schultz. Free's interpretations of the emails are really questionable, but with no full report to examine, the media really didn't have anything other than what Free was telling them and what was in the summary. So it's sort of like the presentment again. They're telling the media and telling the public what they want them to hear and shielding them from deeper information on the case. However, neither the board nor the Free investigative team were aware that the federal government had launched its own investigation into the case. And this is really the critical part of episode 4. We come to find out that Graham Spanier had been an asset to the government for years. Spanier, who himself was abused as a child, had a very high level government clearance and was in fact working with the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, and NCIS on a number of different committees. And so he was viewed as a very trusted individual by the US government. So when this story comes out, when this case comes out and Spanier is implicated in a cover-up, the Obama administration had no choice but to conduct their own investigation in order to find out whether it was true and whether they needed to remove Spanier's high-level clearances. At that point, a guy by the name of John Snedden is brought into the story. Snedden is a former NCIS investigator. At this point, he's still an NCIS investigator, and he's asked to head this investigation on behalf of the federal government. And his investigation was conducted almost immediately after the charges were brought. So it took 6 months, but it began right there at the end of 2011. So Snedden's investigation was actually done before the Free investigation was done, but it was the results of that investigation were confidential. And so there was no awareness on anyone's part that this investigation had been conducted by Snedden. In episode 4, we get John Snedden to join John Ziegler and Liz Habib and answer questions for about an hour about the investigation he conducted and his findings. Woody, where do you want to start?
Let's go back to the Free deal. Dude made $6.5 million. You know, I wish somebody would pay me that much to do what he does, but I do what he does to a certain extent, or I did. But why come out with it after the case, right after the trial, after everything? And it stinks to high heaven, obviously. And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't he try to coach Zig on what to say before he went in with the Sandusky interview?
No, that was Jim Clemente.
That's right. Another FBI profile.
That was Clemente. Here's the key thing on the timing of the Free report. The NCAA was contemplating, after Sandusky's conviction, whether they were going to give Penn State the death penalty, right? They did SMU years back, or, you know, what penalties they were going to put in place for Penn State. You have a football season that's going to start in September. The trial is over June 22nd. And so they need to get the board exonerated. They need to negotiate with the NCAA what the penalties are going to be, because Penn State football needs to go on. And that's the focus the Board of Trustees has. They want all of this wrapped up so that they can have a football season and turn the page on this thing.
Yeah. And I don't believe anybody on the board. I don't believe Joe Paterno. I don't believe any of these people were complicit in covering up for a child molester. Now, what they are guilty of is going, oh shit, Scott Paterno came out and said this, and whatever the fuck, the players are praying on the 50-yard line, and, you know, talking about victims or alleged victims when there hadn't been a victim yet established. But they, you know, college football is big money. And they want to save the university. They want to save the program, like you said. And so they fire Paterno. And you're right, from a criminal investigation standpoint, there's nothing at this time that is, you know, they don't have a for real, full-fledged victim at this time, right? And like the second victim, the alleged second victim, in case y'all didn't listen to it, he reported something to his mom. Oh, he came home with like wet hair or something. His mom's like, why do you have wet hair? And he's like, me and, I don't know what he called him, but me and Jerry worked out and we took a shower and, you know, supposedly a bear hug or some bullshit like that occurred. And the mom flipped out on it. And so their version of OCS, Office of Child Protective Services, and the detective go out and they interview Sandusky. And he was sitting, he was surprised about the interview. But, you know, whatever. He didn't admit to anything other than supposedly he told the mom at some point, I wish I were dead. Is that correct, Mike?
Yes. So yeah. This is something that happened in 1998.
Right.
There's a boy who becomes victim number six at trial. His name is actually Zach Constance. And Sandusky was under the impression that Zach had cancer. Turned out that he didn't have cancer. He had something else. But so he treated him to some kind of special day at around the team and everything like that. But the kid was little, and apparently everybody gets a mental picture of this when we say shower. People see, you know, a single shower and a curtain and think, well, anything but. No, these are open public Penn State shower rooms with maybe 25, 30 or more shower heads. This is where the football team is showering after practice and after games. It's an open room and it's very much public. And so Sandusky, after the workout with the kid, they shower up and the kid apparently can't rinse his hair. And so Sandusky picks him up and holds him toward the shower head and helps him rinse the soap off of his head. The boy comes home and his hair is wet. And his mother says, why is your hair wet? And he says, I took a shower with Jerry. She becomes very concerned and she goes to Child Protective Services and they go and the police get involved and conduct an investigation. And they actually arrange a sting where Sandusky is going to be recorded as he comes to the home and the mother questions him about what has happened. And that exchange is where Sandusky becomes very emotional and is tearing up saying, I'm so, so sorry. I wanted to make the day special for him. I held him up to the shower because he wasn't tall enough. Love Zach. I would never. They try and give her certain questions to ask to try and get him to say something incriminating. He doesn't say anything incriminating. They come to the locker room at Penn State and interview Sandusky again at Penn State, and they conclude their investigation rather quickly, and the case was to have been expunged. So they found nothing. They brought no charges. There were no actions against Sandusky taken, and the case was supposed to not exist, only the file wasn't destroyed, and it was found by police during the investigation following the McQueary incident coming out. Hey everybody, it's Aggo. Listen up, especially you ladies over 40. I've got some good news. It's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution. It relieves symptoms of menopause. It promotes healthy weight loss and curbs cravings. It improves sleep quality. It reduces bloating and gas. It relieves hot flashes. It can even relieve occasional mood swings, although nothing like that has ever happened in my house. Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalance should take it, but it's perfect for the horrible menopause symptoms that make you put your life on hold. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and code RLRC at checkout for 15% off today.
Get 15% off a set of Brake Best Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
And so it was brought into trial. One of the amazing things is that the testimony of victim six, Zach, who is paid by far the least amount of any of the supposed victims, is basically what I just said. But with one extra line thrown in, which is that he didn't understand at the time that Sandusky was likely grooming him for future abuse, right? So just throwing that, he described the day very much the way I described it, and then threw in the line about grooming.
Even after that, the mom still let him have contact with Sandusky, right? And she asked him to get him into a game, and it was like his last game or some shit, and he didn't have enough tickets, but he got him in. They did other things together. The mother never, after that initial deal, the mother never said anything else. I mean, to the negative.
Exactly. Later. And so, right. So, and this is a recurring theme we'll see with all of these quote unquote victims is, and it's one of the problems with accusations that go back in history 10 years or longer that don't contemplate what's happened in between. We will learn that for multiple years, Mike McQuarrie played in the Second Mile golf tournament with Jerry Sandusky. This is long after having supposedly seen, witnessed this anal sex with a 10-year-old boy in a shower, right?
But he said he said he didn't see anal sex, or at least he said that outside of the grand jury, right? And still am tied up on how the fuck the grand jury could come out and say that unless he went in there and lied and said that. You just can't make shit up in an indictment.
That's exactly what they did. Shit up. And then this episode is so important because this episode, and if you listen to the Sneddon interview, because Ziegler is not a conspiracy theorist. He's very much of the perfect storm theory of this case where people are actually out to do good, but in believing they're doing good, they do a lot of bad. Sneddon's approach is no. Corbett is a very bad man. Corbett wanted to get Spanier badly. Corbett saw his opportunity to get Spanier, and Paterno became collateral damage because Corbett basically leveraged his position with the board to get both of them fired. And then Corbett needed to make sure that his tracks got covered everywhere. They had McQuarrie on sending these illicit photos to co-eds. They had him on shaving points in football games. And so they had him in a very compromised position when they went to him asking him to be a witness. But even with all of that, he maneuvered his story from, I saw Jerry, in the showers with a kid and walking out. It's just weird. He shouldn't be showering with kids. They got him to move that to, it looking like it was some kind of sex act, but that he really couldn't see everything clear enough to know if it was one. And then them actually putting in the presentment that, claiming in the presentment that he had witnessed anal sex, which he had never witnessed. He had never said he had witnessed. And he even wrote an email to Janelle Eschbach saying he was going to hold a press conference to clarify things when she begged him not to, because she knew her whole case would fall apart. And so my personal opinion is that investigators get to McQuarrie and they tell him what his story needs to be, because Corbett needs the story to be true. He fired Grant. He's the governor of the state now. He fired Graham Spanier. He put Jerry Sandusky in prison. He killed Joe Paterno. All of these things, he needs those to go away. McQuarrie can make it go away. And that's clearly what Snedden, who had no skin in this game, the government, and by the way, he doesn't draw a conclusion. He presents evidence, and then there's a separate committee that goes through all the evidence he's collected, and it's that committee that makes the determination. That committee made its determination to renew Graham Spanier's high-level security clearance. So the Obama administration did this investigation. This guy Snedden leads it. At the end of the investigation, on all the evidence he presents, the government promptly renews Spanier's clearance. And that gets a little bit of publicity. And believe it or not, and this is what happens in this case, the media moves toward the Obama administration being co-conspirators with Spanier and the Penn State administrators in covering up these crimes. Come on. But yeah. But that's the big thing. If you haven't listened to this episode yet, is to listen to the hour-long interview with Snedden, where he explains what he found in his investigation. And he refers to this entire case as, quote, the Penn State goat screw. That's what he calls it, the Penn State goat screw.
Yeah. So, and I agree, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, like Zig said, it's basically a perfect shit show for everybody from Corbett to whatever, to, you know, have a chance to get back to Spanier and whatever the fuck. But again, when we get into the meat of the trial and the victims, or as you would say, alleged victims, and the 40 counts of convictions of molestation, that I've said it before, and I'll say it again, I don't believe Spanier or Paterno or any of them had or going to cover for a child molester. Don't believe that. But when are we going to get into the meat of the 40 counts of molestation?
We're going there next. But all of this context, all of this background is really critical to all of that, because what formed the public opinion about this case is all this stuff. This is what ingrained in the public. Jerry Sandusky is a serial child abuser. It was this story. It was the boy in the shower. That was the story that made the Penn State scandal. So
totally understand that. Not disagreeing with that. But when you get into a court of law, even though what's his name, I'm sure they got him to say whatever behind closed doors, that he saw the anal sex or whatever. When you get into a court of law, there's 12 people, 12 average citizens sitting in that jury box, and they heard, I don't know how many counts they heard it on, but they heard and they return a guilty verdict on 40 counts of molestation. I mean, they're not involved with the governor of Pennsylvania. They're not involved with whomever, right? They heard what they heard, and they, beyond a reasonable doubt, came back and said 40 counts. And so that's why I just wanted to mention that.
It's actually 45,
right?
It's actually 45.
I mean, that's a fucking lot, bro. I get some of them where it's a money grab and I got all that. But yeah, I don't know.
No, Woody, that's what we need to every single one is a money grab.
You know what? So if he did molest them, then it should have been a fucking money grab. But I'm not saying he did, but let's get into it. that's what the people are going to want to hear. We all understand the backstory. We all understand it could be this and could be this and this and this. I think it was a perfect shit show, political storm and everything else. And that, like you said, good people thought they were doing good shit, but it was really bad shit. But a court of law has rules and restrictions and everything else, and we need to get into that.
Yep, but also we need to understand that these 12 citizens are living in this community. This is the biggest thing that has ever happened in the history of that community. There's no hiding from there's no going into that trial and expecting there to be a single potential juror in the county that isn't aware of the case. Important context before going
into it. I understand. Okay. And I told you about this before. I'm going to make you go sit with me through a voir dire on whatever the biggest case is. And they will ask them about, have you heard of this? What do you have preconceived notions? Well, with what you heard or what you read, do you think you could still sit there and listen independently and make up your own conclusion? I mean, that's fuck that. Every serial killer case, every high profile case. Let's do Courtney Cocoa's case. The whole goddamn voir dire was about real life, real crime and the podcast. And the defense attorney kept harping on that. And every one of them had heard of him. One guy was like, fuck no. It won't ever change my opinion because I know Woody Overton's telling the truth, so he was excused. That's why they have strikes. But I understand it's the biggest thing that ever happened in that community. But it's still 12 people who have to follow the instructions, and I'm sure they were given, and just like they are in every case. And they have the Sandusky's team had so many strikes. The prosecution has so many strikes, and the judge has so many strikes or can strike as many as they want to. So we'll get into that, and then we'll have some explaining to do. If you can convince me 45 counts, then you know I understand all the rest of it. I understand the backstory. I think it's very shitty that they use this, you know, assistant coach McQuarrie, whatever his name is. They, you know, should have never came out with the first Bill and Diamond or Ramwood and fired Paterno and did all this shit. I understand that, but if people come out and they did it and they presented a case, I want to hear the facts of the case. Right. And then you can defend. I'm open minded. And if they don't prove it, I'll tell you.
No. So before McQuarrie, before this whole thing that creates the panic, there's two stories, the one you just mentioned and so-called victim one, whose story we'll go through in the next episode. That's what exists. The case is going away. They're not going to bring charges. And then this McQuarrie thing happens. So the government had already told us in the evidence that we have found that they had no case and they knew they had no case. But then the McQuarrie thing happens and they turn it into this public theater that they turned it into. Now they start fishing for victims, dangling cash.
Hey, you know what?
We'll get into that. We'll get into that in the next episode.
I got something to say on it. When you start to work an investigation, right? Especially in all the kid rape cases I worked, et cetera. One husband and wife team over 20 years, I found over 30 something victims. And a lot of them are growing up now and everything else and don't want to get involved, et cetera. But when you say fishing, the investigator is investigating, you're going to always look for more victims. You are. But I'm not going out there paying a motherfucker cash. I understand there's some lawyers that are going to sue and make money off of this, and this shouldn't have been stopped. There's, you know, they knew this, whatever the fuck. I understand
that. Okay, but don't forget, Woody.
You can't say every cop is out there fishing to they're going to pull in just anybody and take them and take their word.
Don't forget, because I'm going to prove to you that's exactly what they did. Don't forget that in March.
So cops are offering money in March for lawsuits.
Yeah. No. I'm not saying cops are offering money.
Exactly.
I'm saying that you'll see some police corruption that you won't believe as we get deeper into this. But in March of 2011, that is 8 months before they bring charges against Sandusky, they leak to Sarah Ganim.
I already know. Cub reporter. We already talked about it.
Okay. So are already chumming the water starting in March, looking for victims to come forward. Nobody comes forward. Yeah. Nobody. It's not until the McQueary thing. So we will go there next time. Next time we will combine episode 5 and episode 6 because they cover the first two accusations, the 1998 accusation and the victim one accusation from 2008. They occur 10 years apart from each other, but they're actually the first two victims.
I want everybody to know, other than knowing that Sandusky was convicted, I don't know the facts and the details of this case, even from the criminal investigation standpoint. So ultimately, my mind will be, open one way or another. Look, I do more defense work probably than I ever worked cases, put people in prison since I've retired. And I believe in innocent motherfuckers innocent, especially if I can prove it. But if you're guilty, you're guilty. But we'll find out.
We will. Awesome, bud. Thank you, folks. Well, enjoy the rest of your week.
Yep.
All that good podcaster stuff, as Woody would say.
Continue to like and share and tell everybody about it, right?
Yeah, and that one lady who keeps writing Apple. I mean, I'll give you my email address. You can write me the nastiest note you want to write me, but hiding behind anonymous stuff
let me tell you my thought on that. And I had to learn this the hard way in podcasting years ago.
Don't read reviews.
No, you can read them. My thought is if I fucked up your day so bad that you're going to actually take the time to go to Apple and leave me a 1-star review, then that just makes me smile. Because you know how hard it is to get somebody to leave a review, period. Whatever. And then, no, I don't pay attention to them and I don't respond to them because I don't give a fuck. But if you're going to take the time to leave me a 1-star review, thank you. A review is a review. So, Mike,
We'll talk back at you on Friday.
All right.
Peace. Woody, little peace.
Peace.
Aglets.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.